Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast.
Hello, Slackers. I hope you're good. We have got another podcast in season four of the Slacker Podcast. This season is definitely the longest season in the history of mankind. I don't know. What has been a longer season? EastEnders? Coronation Street? That's just one long, never-ending season of misery. Whereas this one, I'm bringing you lovely guests every single week for you to enjoy. And to be fair, like, I don't have any plan on stopping. I've got podcasts booked up and done in the can and ready to go up until, I think, the mid of October. And I'm still recording. I'm recording one with Connor Oberst today, which won't come out for a little while. And maybe, I mean, they said they're interested. They said they want to do it. But Jaden Smith, that'd be pretty interesting, right? Anyway, like, I'm going to keep hammering away at them. I'm going to keep trying to get the best guests possible. And yeah, so like, if you have any suggestions that of people that you want to get on the podcast, then hit me up on Twitter or Instagram at Philly Taggart with one L. Or if you really like listen to the podcast flat out and you want to show a little bit of appreciation, on Acast, there's a way, if you go to the page on Acast, you can donate whatever you want. But what I would suggest is joining the Patreon community, the patreon.com/slackerpodcast. It's where all the cool fuckers hang out. Everybody, that guy that you like looked up to in school, that girl you looked up to in school, they're all on there. They're all laughing, they're all drinking Pimm's and Tia Maria, and there's like pool parties. And yeah, it's incredible. It's probably one of the best Patreons in the history of mankind. I mean, really what you get on the Patreon is exclusive material, exclusive podcasts that don't make it onto normal podcasts. I just record it specifically for the Patreons. Also, I give feedback on tunes and music. There's consultation advice. There's loads of stuff. I'll dance with a comb, you know, like a little piece of tissue over a comb and blow it. As long as it keeps the Slacker Podcast good name running. So I what have I got for you? All right, I've talked about the Patreon. Let's just get into it, will we? Like I'll not slabber any longer. I think the last couple I've done, I've spoken for quite a long time before it, and this isn't the Joe Rogan podcast. I'm not going to sell you about 100 different things. Our podcast today is from Sleaford Mods with Jason Williamson. We sat down in the start of April to record this, and I did have to edit some stuff out because it just doesn't feel applicable anymore. But some of it I had to keep in just for narrative sake, really, of the conversation. We were recording this. It was probably the first podcast I hadn't done face to face, the first one over Zoom, and there was a lot of talk about like lockdown. I think it was like 3 weeks in and stuff like that. So I've cut most of that out. But he is an opinionated dude. He's got a lot to say about a lot of things. He is in a band that like took over the country for a period of a couple of years, and is still smashing it with Sleaford Mods. And if you've come across them and you don't know their music, you may have seen some of the spats that they've got into over the last couple of years. They don't do that really anymore, but you know, there had been the spats with Idols and Slaves and Blossoms. And I mean, for me as a music fan, it makes it all a little bit more colourful. So anyway, without further ado, here is the Slacker Podcast with Sleaford Mods in 3, 2, 1. Joining me now on the Slacker Podcast, we have Jason Williamson, one half of Sleaford Mods. Hello.
How you doing?
It's a cheeky little grim to the course, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So how's it going? How's things?
Yeah, good-ish. It's all getting a bit, sometimes it gets a bit quite tense in the house, but we're getting through it, do you know what I mean?
Mm. As we record this, I think we're like either on week three. I think all the days blur into one at the minute. I have no idea where we're at, but I think we're on week three at the moment. So like, yeah, a couple arguments going around everybody's house at the minute, but it's all good. You're keeping yourself busy, aren't we?
Yeah, trying to. Yeah. We're doing as much online as we can without kind of ruining it for everybody by just being on there 24/7. So, and thinking of other ways to, you know, just create a presence, a sort of online presence that's interesting and helps keep the band in people's eyes, you know what I mean? So, but also, you know, we've got a new record to promote with all that glue, and we're just trying to find ways to try and push that as well, do you know what I mean? Because we haven't got gigs to sort of promote it, you know, so.
That's it.
So yeah, all those things, yeah.
Have you missed out on a lot of gigs? Has a lot of stuff been cancelled for you guys?
Yeah, quite. No, it was a quiet year for us anyway, but we had probably about 30 odd gigs, 35 gigs, 40 gigs probably, which is quiet for us. So we've lost out on a fair few, but, you know, hopefully it will, it won't be for too long, you know.
Yeah, I get this feeling that like as soon as everybody's allowed to tour again, the whole world is going to be touring, and that's going to be a good thing because the whole world is going to want to see music as well. So I feel like
this is it, you know. And I think, there was talk of all venues getting taken up by the bigger bands and the mid-level bands, but I disagree. You know, I think there'll be lots of scope for bands, sort of DIY bands as well, to kind of get out there.
That is if those small venues actually make it through, because a lot of those small venues that I know of are very hand to mouth as it is. So like, you know, some of them won't make it through this whole coronavirus crisis.
A lot of them are obviously small businesses. It's just not, they're going to get eaten up.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting to see what kind of landscape full of discomfort that's going to be really when this finishes, you know what I mean? It's certainly not a good thing to think about or look for, you know, but it looks like it's going to come on top, doesn't it? So
yeah, these album listening parties that you're doing, you've got them sort of scheduled out now up until the end of May. They seem to have been going down quite well. I saw you did one with Tim Burgess from the Charlatans?
Yeah. Well, Tim started it. It was Tim's idea. And he asked us if we wanted to do Key Markets, which was the third album. We sort of said, yeah, go on then. And then afterwards, we thought, oh, fuck it. You know, a lot of people were coming, getting in touch and saying, I'd love it if you could do the rest of the album. So we asked Tim if that would be all right, because obviously it's his idea. We didn't want to kind of take it and run with it, but Tim was fine with it, you know. So so we're looking forward to that. First one's tonight at 8:15.
What are you doing an album listening party like? Do you get everybody to sit and listen? Because I actually haven't done one yet. Like I've seen a couple of people do like Netflix, where like watching movies together and stuff like that, but is it just like live tweeting while listening to the songs?
Yeah. You just start the album from start to finish, go through each track, and you just live tweet as much as you can, you know. It's slightly more doable for us. Our audience isn't as big as, say, I mean, Boned did, Definitely Maybe. Mm-hmm. He also did What's the Story as well, but he was having a night. He was having a nightmare. Just, you can imagine, can't you? It's slightly more realistic for us. It's slightly more doable. But we were still up until 1 in the morning answering tweets, you know what I mean?
That's it. I mean, like, in lieu of having to get up for anybody having to get up for a job at the minute, 1 a.m. doesn't really matter anymore.
No, this is a thing.
It doesn't matter for me, you know?
But it's quite easy to slip into that. I mean, the whole thing about trying to keep the vibe in the house good is not slipping into it too much.
Yeah, of course.
Not letting go too much, you know.
Speaking of Bonehead, just because I was thinking about this the other day, I was like, would I go to an Oasis reunion if it was just Liam Gallagher, Bonehead, Tony, and all the rest of them, bar Noel? I don't know if I would.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, he's got to have Noel in it, but at the same time, you just don't want to go because of Noel, do you? And I think a lot of people share that opinion, you know. Mm. It's not, I wouldn't say that would be an unfair remark, you know. But I would you go if it was all them lot, bar Noel, if it had Tony McCarolyn doing the drumming again? That could be interesting, you know what I mean? But yeah, unfortunately, he is a member, you know, part of the original lineup, so.
Yeah,
he'd have to be there, wouldn't he?
Yeah, big time. I've never seen Oasis live, but I did see Liam Gallagher a couple of years ago playing in Finsbury Park, and the crowd that he gets is like, they're just like, I've never seen anything like it before, like in England, in the south of England. In Ireland, that's just a normal gig, but in the south of England, people were losing their shit so much that there was a guy standing beside me who was about 6'5", probably about 22 stone, carried it really well, and was completely bollock naked, drinking a bottle of Rosie. And I mean completely bollock naked, smoking a fag, drinking a bottle of Rosie, and just enjoying himself, and not even making like any notifications to anybody going, look, I'm naked.
Yeah. I mean, this is it, you know. I mean, you're going to get what you get at these gigs, especially with, you just get a largely working class audience, I would imagine. I've never seen him live. I've seen Liam live, but I haven't seen Oasis.
So, yeah, that's how I'm on about Liam, yeah.
Yeah, but you are getting largely an audience that, you know, is from the lower echelons of society. And that's not, you know, I'm not being disrespectful there, but, you know, it appeals, and it still appeals to a working class audience. So that's what you're getting, isn't it? You know what I mean? You know, all these other sort of bands, sort of mid-level, I don't know, more softer, nicer bands, you're getting a different clientele, you know, which is fair enough. But, yeah, that's just the way it is, I think.
Yeah, but the middle-class clientele never seems to lose their shit as much. It's never as interesting.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. And it's quite orderly and quite, you know, it's quite adult, so to speak. So, which, you know, I prefer it, actually. You know, I can't be doing with, you know, seeing a load of lads just spitting and swearing and just talking absolute shit. I can't be doing with it, you know.
There's pros and cons to each one, and the pros to the working class one, like, because I grew up in an estate, went to those gigs, went to those festivals growing up, but those gigs, the older you get, the less appealing they are, the more you're just like, oh, for fuck's sake, give me a seat and a drink.
Yeah,
and
yeah, it's a young thing, and it's a beer thing, it's a drink thing, isn't it, you know. You've got to be absolutely arsehole. I saw some clips of the last Liam tour, and it's like just lads fighting, and it's just same old, isn't it? It's much the same as a terrace, really, in a lot of respects. You know what I mean?
The football fans out. So we've got a demo of Guillotine that we're going to play now. What's the sort of timestamp on that? What album was that from?
This is one of the really early ones. It didn't make it because the lyrics were a bit cheesy, but Andrew's music's really on point here. It's really good.
So it's your fault then?
Yeah, my fault, basically. I'm taking one for the team.
Yeah, okay.
The lyrics were a little bit too, I don't know, just a bit obvious, and for me anyway. So, yeah, it didn't quite make it.
Okay, here it is. Sleaford Mods, a demo of Guillotine from 2012, I'm guessing.
12, early 13, something like that. It could have possibly been. But it was definitely one of the first things we did where both of us looked at each other and thought, oh, that's actually all right. Yeah. But it just didn't make the cut because of the lyrics, really.
What's the sort of vibe in the studio with you two when you put together a demo like that? Is there a studio? Is it in your houses? Like how does it work? Do you send it back and forth?
He sends me the music and then I'll listen to it and come up with words, or we just get in the studio and just throw words and music together. You know, it kind of alternates, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess with the sort of how prolific you've been releasing albums, that it comes quite naturally to you guys.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, oh God, how long can we keep this interesting? Because there's nothing to it. So it's like, fucking hell, you know, oh shit. So with each release, you are, with each journey into a new album, you are constantly, quite nervous, because it's like, will it work? Will it fall apart? Is this it? So we'll see. You know what I mean?
You're quite a singer as well. Like, could you not like to start laying down some croons, some like Frank Sinatra?
That'd be terrible. I think he'd walk out if I did that.
what was the spark between you and Andrew when you started working together? Like, what was the sort of commonality that you had?
Don't know. Just that he took on board what I had to say, and a lot of the time people don't. They kind of just ignore it because egos get in the way, and he was willing to just go along with my idea. He didn't really have an idea as such as what kind of sound, but I approached him with the idea in mind. And because he was good at engineering, because he made his own beats and those beats sounded good, I thought it would be something that we could work with. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, when I got with him and sort of said, this is what I want, he took that on board and turned it into his own thing, you know.
Does he do his own, like, beats and stuff outside of this as well? Like, does he make beats for other people, or is, like, you know, Sleeping
He does his own solo project, Extended Network, which is really kind of lo-fi, atmospheric, soundtracky vibe to it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Very minimal, just very off, you know, sort of really... not random, but it's certainly different. Do you know what I mean?
I want to come back to Sleaford Mods in a little bit. I just want to come back to sort of the very start and see what sort of music you were into as a kid. Like, what sort of music was being played around your gaff when you were growing up?
Oh God, my old man was into like pop music, into, you know, the stuff at the time, which was the Human League, Queen, just like anything in the charts. He wasn't really into... he always used to brag about his Beatles collection, but he never played anything like that. Always stuff of the moment. So, yeah, and as a kid, you know, you had to endure. It wasn't very interesting, stuff like Duran Duran, which now is good, you know. But back in the day, sort of 1980, it wasn't. It was kind of commercial contemporary pop music, which wasn't. It wasn't interesting for me anyway.
What did that do to you? Did that skew you the other way? Because I mean, my mom listened to John Denver when I was growing up, and at the same time, I'd be listening to The Prodigy when I get home just to get myself back onto even key. Okay. Like, you know,
both of those are quite good, right? I mean, well, obviously The Prodigy, but it did do much. I didn't really have an opinion on it until I met my stepbrother, who was banging to punk music, and so then I started getting into punk. Around 1981, particularly Sex Pistols, kind of the Exploited, Antipasti, a lot of the kind of second wave punk bands, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Damned, just stuff like that, started listening to it and was getting quite obsessed with that stuff.
Did you get to go and see them around that time, or would you have been...
Nah. I mean, obviously the Pistols had broke up by then. Yeah. The Dam was still going, but no, I didn't bother. You know, I nearly got the chance to see the Jam, but that fell through as well.
That's the name Sleaford Mods goes back to the sort of mod culture that you were into, like when you were like a teenager, like you would have been into the Jam and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, sure, totally. It was the done thing, you know.
Did you have a Vespa?
No, I did actually for a brief period, but I can't be dealing with those old contraptions. You know, I really, you know, it's fine. A lot of people are into it, and I know a lot of people that have got one. So, you know, I don't want to appear rude when I say that they just don't appeal to me. You know, it's like riding around in a 1950s Morris Minor or something.
The saddest thing that can ever happen, a mod, is completely losing your hair, because you kind of lose your identity as a mod and suddenly become a skinhead. There's a fella that I heard about who, like, identifies massively as a mod but lost all his hair, so went to Turkey to get a hair transplant, is now affectionately known around his bits as the Turkish mod.
Has his hair come back then?
Well, it's magic, it's back. Fair play to him, man. Like, you got the balls to step up and do that, man. I'm getting light on top too. I might have to take a little trip that way one way or the other myself.
I mean, my age, people just have skinheads and just walk around in polo tops, you know, and that usually sort of says, yeah, I'm still a mod, but
it works that way.
Yeah.
So, like, what was the, like, were you into the stuff like the the Smiths and stuff? Because obviously, like, the 80s was like the your sort of formative years coming up.
Yeah, no, I wasn't. No, I was never into them. It was never a thing. In my school, it was either the Jam or nothing. Most people in my school.
There was nothing else.
In my school, in fact, the people that were in the higher classes, that, you know, the more sort of, you know, because it went from A to D.
Yeah.
And so I was in D. And anyone in the A classes, there was a whiff of, you know, sort of prog rock. But that was more for grammar schools. In secondary schools, it was largely sort of soul, Tamla Motown, Northern Soul, and you know, bands like the Jam, U2 as well when they first came out as well, because they did quite appeal to that kind of an audience. You know what I mean?
Were you a U2 fan when they came out?
No, I couldn't be doing with it. But the first album's really good. They were good. You know, let's face it. You know what I mean?
Have you heard Bono's son's kids got a band now called Inhaler, and they're sort of doing their bit at the minute?
What are they like?
I think they're good. I don't think you'll like them.
What kind of music is it?
I don't mind them. Who do they remind me of? They remind me a little bit of Blossoms, but maybe a little bit more rock and roll.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Right, okay. Yeah. What are they called?
Called Inhaler.
Inhaler.
As in, if you're asthmatic, you need a.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about acid house and stuff like that? Like, did you fuck about with, like, rave music and things like that?
Just club. Yeah, I was more of like a clubber. I wasn't a raver.
What's the difference?
Well, clubbers were a little bit more smarter. Ravers were kind of that uniform. Bucket hats, flares, you know, sort of long sleeve tops.
What would the music be for a raver, and what would the music be for a clubber?
Ravers, it would be hardcore, happy hardcore.
Oh shit! Techno, respect to the techno. Man in the ice cream van.
Yeah. I mean, the techno was a thing for clubbers as well, but it was kind of more controlled, a little bit slower. Everything was at a certain BPM for ravers. Whereas clubbers were, it was more Italian house music, sort of, you know, stuff coming out of New York, and also 70s disco, big influence there, Balearic stuff as well, all that thrown in. Do you know what I mean?
I feel like those musical sort of, like, points that you mixed out there now is kind of what clubbers listen to now. A lot of my friends will listen to a lot of Italo, a lot of old disco, some rare Northern Soul. Like, I don't think that's died.
Sure, yeah. I think, you know, because my sister was a raver, and, you know, it was just terrible. You know, you're looking at really fast BPM, you know, speeded up vocals. But then again, there was some good rave music, obviously. But, you know, we were more into the kind of more glossy clubber type things.
Would you pilgrimage? Like, would you, like, go to Manchester? Would you go to Glasgow?
We went to the Hacienda once, but that was just after it was starting to decline. It wasn't great. I think it was on a Monday night or something. It was shit. The ecstasy wasn't very. We bought some pills. They were shit. Yeah, it wasn't very good. We used to venture out to Leeds, Huddersfield, but it was mostly Nottingham, a club called Venus that we'd go to, that was just brilliant.
Was the ecstasy and drugs and stuff like that, like, an important part of it?
Yeah, well, it was the only reason you did it. And then obviously the music followed, mm-hmm. but, you know, drugs got you into it big time. It was just like a revelation, you know. It really was. Ecstasy was absolutely brilliant. and then it went sour very quickly, you know.
What were you doing, like, yourself? Were you trying to make it in music at that stage, or were you working?
No, I was clubbing. I'd actually moved to America to see my cousin and ended up staying for like 6 months. I saved up a load of money and went over there in the hope of trying to get a band together like an idiot. Which was a really unrealistic thing, but at the same time, it was good life experience. Kind of learned to try and, you know, I learned to live on my own a little bit.
Yeah.
Sort of caught up with the trials and tribulations of life. as an employed, you know, sort of person. So it was quite interesting.
How far did you get, like, when you went to San Francisco? Like, when you want to start a band and you move to, like, a new city like that, what do? Like, just put a piece of paper up at a studio?
I just bought a guitar and then just was, like, trying to meet people.
Mm.
It was obviously still apparent that that was quite an unrealistic thing, really. And so I came home after about 6 months.
When you came home, did you bring the same guitar home with you and the same ambition?
Yeah, I bought the same. Yeah, I did bring the same guitar home. It was terrible. But yeah, I still had the same ambition. But that got put on the back burner for a while because I got back into clubbing again. And I was just living for the weekend, really, working in a factory and then going out raving at the weekend, clubbing at the weekend, and that was it. And then I didn't start properly getting back into the idea of trying to do it until about 92. I was in the process of trying to get into theatre schools, but because I thought I'd go and do that because I really enjoy acting. When I did my A-levels at college.
Mm.
But theatre schools were just, again, that was another room. It just felt like I was banging my head against a brick wall. It was, you know, it was a lot of money for the course fees, which I didn't have. And you were mostly getting people from wealthy backgrounds sort of auditioning and getting in, you know what I mean?
I was going to say, like, drama in the early 90s and 80s would have been only something that people in the middle and upper classes could really, really do.
Oh, like, fucking big time.
Shane Meadows and all that sort of stuff hadn't kicked in till like the 2000s when it sort of opened up to the working class, really.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, it was really a, you know, you could tell that each audition that you went to, people were just like, next, come on, you know. If you have the money, if I'd have had the money to go, it would have been a case of, yeah, I'd have gotten somewhere, definitely.
See, you should have went in with a fake name. Like Jason's fine, like it can kind of surf between classes, but you should have just gone straight in and go, hello, Gilbert here. Sign him up.
I can remember, I did one at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, and she was like, come back next year, just come back. And I'm like, I can't keep working in this shithole just to fund auditions, because they were like 25, 30 quid at a crack.
Yeah.
So I just got back into taking more drugs, going out clubbing, and then sort of had a reawakening with music when Paul Weller released his second solo album, Wildwood.
Mm.
And I really bang got back into mod and all that kind of stuff, which had been sort of poked about with the Stone Roses, but they just went AWOL And then it just left a massive void. You kind of had Suede, but it wasn't really doing that much for me. And then obviously Weller came out with his album, and a year later, Oasis came out of nowhere with that album. And it was quite a good time. And so I just got totally back into the idea of doing music.
And that's like really the start of Britpop then, around about that time?
Yeah, it was. Well, I mean, kind of Suede were really Britpop, the start of it. And Luke Haynes with the Artois, is it? I think it's that. It'll kill me if I get pronounce his band name wrong. Artois or whatever. Sorry, Luke. And, you know, stuff like that. And then obviously you had Oasis came along. But they weren't really Britpop. I think they just got lumped in with it. They just came out under the... you know, under the influence of the Stone Roses, etc. And then you had all these other bands jumping in there as well, you know what I mean?
It was a really fertile moment for obviously guitar bands from the UK, but like almost equally there was so much shite that came out, like baggaged as Britpop as well, because all of the major record labels were realizing, hey, we can make a load of money off this. So they signed any band that had a decent haircut anywhere in the UK.
Absolutely tons. I just didn't like. But it really was a melting pot of the image of it, you know, that haircut and everything else. And this resurgence, this new period of mod that had come with it, really did take, you know. Cocaine had became very popular, you know, consumerism up to notch with fashion and everything else. And it started to become a very dark place, you know what I mean, I think.
What was that like for you? Because, like, you would have been, like, you know, like... trying to make it as a band. Were you working in a factory at that time as well?
I was doing factory stuff, and then I started to get into fashion retail, clothing retail, because you didn't obviously need any experience, and you just needed to like clothes, which I did anyway. So I started getting into stuff like that, which was better obviously than you know, working on a line.
But what's it like if you're making like minimum wage or just above, and you're into this whole consumerism and getting caught up in the idea of champagne and cocaine that sort of that Britpop kind of showed out to the world? What's it like when you're earning what you're earning and you're watching Alex James talking about spending £1,000 on this million pounds on whatever?
Yeah, problematic because. At the time I was earning fucking hell, I don't know, probably about coming out with about 600 quid a month, not even that, 500, I can't remember. It was, but if I bought 1 gram of coke, that'd be it. I'd have no more money for the rest of the month because you went on rent, stuff like, obviously food, traveling to work. So it became problematic, and you'd end up getting into debt with drugs mostly. All of us did, you know. But because the cocaine thing was so popular, so prevalent, it allowed for people to buy it on the Never Never, and you were constantly owing people money for it, do you know what I mean? You know, and it became like sort of almost like the Gallaghers were – at the top of the mountain, you know, there they were, and they were iconic in the sense that what they represented back then was this insular cocaine taking society. Do you know what I mean? Which it's still now. I mean, cocaine. I mean, we're the biggest place in Europe for it, aren't we? Still. But back then it was like, you know. Because you could relate to the Gallaghers so much, because obviously they were just two working class lads. It's like it was almost within reach, you know what I mean? But not. So it was quite a claustrophobic time, really.
Did it get out of hand? Like, did you have to like knock it on the head? Because obviously, like, you know, you do drugs.
Yeah, I didn't.
For a long time, somebody's going to come in and just go, here, you need to give your head a shake and.
Yeah, well, yeah, a few times, lots of times, but I just kept taking it until 5 years ago I stopped, and now I haven't done any for since then, you know, I've not drank. I'm completely teetotal now. So
did you go on the 12 steps or did you do it yourself?
No, I didn't need the 12 steps, but I needed to talk to someone. Mm. I needed some psychological help.
Yeah.
So I did that for about a good year when the band took off, because I had the money to, do you know what I mean? It became quite clear that this wasn't going away. So I needed to tackle it. I'd tried other ways. I'd tried going to Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous and doing other stuff, but none of it worked until I gave up drinking and started having psychiatric treatment.
That's good, man. I think everybody needs to find their way.
Yeah, I mean, there's various ways you can do it, but you have to recognize what it is in yourself, and then you need to have a plan, you know.
Mm.
And
something you have to constantly work at, I'd imagine, as well.
Yeah, God, yeah, yeah. You've got to want to do it, but when people's backs are against the wall and they've got no choice, then they change, and that's really what happened to me. You know, I took it to the full limit before I thought, no, I can't carry on because I've got kids now, you know, and obviously my wife, who I was just really just, you know, sending into really bad, dark places. And I just thought, this isn't right, you know.
Mm.
So, yeah, I had to sort that out, which I did, you know.
Well, maybe it's a blessing that your Britpop band didn't take off in the 90s.
I often think about that. And, yeah, it would have been, you know, I talked to Patrick Murray a lot out of These Animal Men, and they were one of the more prominent bands around that time that were, I think they had 4 or 5 top 10 hits. But some of the stuff he comes out with is just, it's a horror story, you know. It would have been bad news, you know what I mean?
Mm.
It was nothing short of a full-scale crime.
Was your band called Meat Pie?
Yeah, Meat Pie, yeah. And it was like a cross between Small Faces and Guns N' Roses.
My God, that sounds absolutely dreadful. out of that, like, you know, a lot of people talk about British revolutions and music and stuff in the mid to late 90s, or so the whole, a lot of the 90s, a lot of the mid period of the 90s, it was Britpop. I think the next great revolution for me in terms of British music was the Esky Beat, the like Wiley's grime, yes, music that kicked off 2001, yeah. Really?
Yeah, sure. I think generally he was largely responsible for it. And when he sees people coming up that he's worked with, who are turning it into a little bit of a nightmare, then why not stick your oar in, you know? I think at the same time, if he's got to be prepared to take the flak, because he gets some fucking shit for it. But I think it's fair enough. If he sat there and he kind of co-designed it, majority of it anyway, I think he's got every right to, you know. I don't know, it's an odd one, isn't it?
See, I mentioned this to you because I know grime music had a big, it was a big inspiration for you.
It was, yeah, like for the early Sleafer stuff. It was really, you know, when me and Andrew first got together, I was obsessed with watching videos of,
well, like Lord of the Mics.
Yeah, little Nottingham street gangs, you know, one of them had a little beat coming through his phone, and then you get these other lads just spitting over it. And I was obsessed with it. It was like, this is brilliant.
I had a conversation with somebody about, like, I was asking them why early grime music sounded the way it did. And they told me that it was made purposely with less of a low end and more of a high end, because it would sound better on a Sony Ericsson.
Yeah, there's that, because, you know, a lot of these people were just listening to it through such things. So, you know, they didn't have the luxury of big speakers, you know what I mean? Which is brilliant, you know. In some respects, it's not a million miles away from skiffle, is it? You know what I mean? It's just the bare bones, you know what I mean? So, I was really taken with it.
Like, what is it about rap music and hip-hop music that made you find your voice?
Just the absolute coarseness of it and the kind of just punky, didn't care for the consequences of what people might think of it, you know. I think I was always into it, but it was always very much hip-hop. It was like, yeah, I can't do that. I love it, but I can't do it, you know. It was always very slick as well, until I started listening to the Wu-Tang's first album, mm-hmm. which it's not slick. It's like it's anything but, and it's desperate. It's chaotic. It's insular. It's just absolutely forward thinking. There's not a lot of rhyming, and yet there is. You know, it's more, if you listen to it closely, they're just shouting, and that's really what got me. You know what I mean? They're just shouting.
I get that.
Yeah, and the little skits in between the songs were fucking just as good as the songs, you know, where he's coming in and talking about shooting two doors down, and, you know, half of them are listening, the other half are bothered about what this certain person owes them, you know what I mean? Where's my money, or where's my tape you get I gave you, blah, blah, blah. And it's just fucking brilliant. And although I'm a million miles away from that, you related to it, do you know what I mean?
There's something structureless about those songs that I quite like. Like, the more aggressive a song is, the less of a structure I feel like it should have. That the structure should be lost in the chaos of the track. Like
I think so.
You guys have that a lot.
Sorry?
You guys have that a lot. Like, sometimes you'll do structureless tracks.
But what pulls it together is a chorus, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of age old. It's like old poems, you know, where like a town crier, some of these European oldie worldy folk poems that are just completely fucking random. And then, but what joins it together is the person saying it will repeat one of the lines twice. And that, to me, it acts as an intro, as a chorus, and as an end, you know what I mean? Mm. So it kind of gels the thing. It's a bit like egg yolk. It kind of marries it together, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Like, I wasn't on, like, your stuff before 2012, 2013, because I know you put out four records before you started working with Andrew, I think. Yeah. Am I right? That was with somebody called Sarf? Saf?
Parf.
I've got
Simon Parfman. Yeah, sorry, yeah.
Sorry, Parf.
Yeah. He's got a bit of an odd name. He's got an odd face as well, actually.
what were those early albums like?
It was just me trying to, you know, just ripping off what I learned from hip hop, which was just trying to get samples. But we didn't know how to sample, so I would just loop things.
Yeah.
And I would loop favorite bits of records. Just shout over those, and that's how it all started, really.
It sounds like the birth of hip hop there.
basically the same thing. I was listening to more sort of late mid-90s period, where it was like they'd nick a drum beat and then put stuff over it, so you're like, oh fuck, how do they do that? And it's like, you know, I mean, Parf was good at engineering, recording stuff, recording vocals. He was quite a technical wizard, but he didn't know how to sample. I don't think he could be bothered, to be honest. And he wasn't interested in writing anything organic, anything new, original. So I just had to come up with the ideas, and he would just record it for me.
You know? So you were basically the engine, and you needed somebody to help steer it that way, and that's where Andrew came in.
Yeah, basically. And I think a lot of them work like that. Weatherall, God bless him, used to work like that. He had somebody that could do the engineering, I think, and he would just sit there and dictate the ideas, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I think like when you're, I don't know, some people see that and they'll be like going, oh, that's not the way you should do it. But like, actually, the older I'm getting, the more I'm looking into producers, people like people like David Holmes.
David Holmes, I was just about to say, for example. He's exactly the same, yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't play too much, but like, my God, like, yeah. Is he a conductor? Like, he can make, yes, make shit happen.
This is it. He brings the ideas. And it, you could put it to sort of like clothes as well, like Paul Smith, you know.
Mm.
Or, I mean, I know he had a lot of tailoring experience, but generally it'll just go up to a load of people that can do that and just say, right, can you do this, that, and the other? You know, people bring the ideas, and there's other people that have got the ability to work the apparatus, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like I know where I want the, like, if I was gonna use a toilet as an example there, and I thought against it. I was just like, I know where I want the toilet to be in the room, but I'm not the one to do it. Maybe I'll leave you to the metaphors and similes. How about that? The first song I heard of you guys was Tied Up in Knots. And I remember hearing it for the first time, and I remember absolutely losing my mind. And I haven't had that feeling too many times since, like with something that like really grabs you, like in a really aggressive manner, where you just come out, yeah. I come out wide eyed afterwards, going, "This is fucking amazing." It did actually happen to me recently with an artist called Bob Villain.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, I heard a track last week, and I had that, and it hasn't happened to me since a band called Touts that I listened to as well. Proper little punk band.
Yeah, I've heard of Touts as well. Actually.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I do a chiller show on Radio 1, but I absolutely love aggressive like punk music and stuff like that. But the thing that like I remember about that song is I remember bringing it to my producer, going, "We're playing this tonight," and my producer was like, "No, we're not, because X, Y, and Z," because it had the word cunt in it. It had like a load of fucks in it. Sure. And I was like, sure. So they were like, "Well, we could edit it out." And I was like, "We can't edit it out because it'll ruin the song."
Yeah.
So I remember my exec editor, it was their first day. So I like walked up to him with the track going, "Can you clear this for me so I can play tonight?" And he was just like, "Are you testing me?" Like he said, I remember he said, he looked at me and just said, he like looked, took his headphones off and just said, "The smell of piss is so strong, it smells like decent bacon. Do you really think we could play that in Radio 1? I was like, "Well, John Peel would have played it." And they were like, "Okay, well, I'll tell you what, you can play it, but just take the cunts out."
That's brilliant. Because he was the boss of Radio 1 then. It was George.
It was George, yeah. That didn't go to George. It didn't go as far up the line to George. Like, it was more nighttime. It was like our sort of evening editor. But fair play to them. Like, they were just like, "Yeah, go ahead. Just take the C word out."
He got in touch with me, George did. And he said, "We'd love to play more of your stuff, but we just can't because of the content. I'm really sorry." And you just don't get that these days, do you? You know what I mean?
Do you feel like kind of like vaguely responsible for what the sort of music that Six Music is putting out right now? Because there's a lot of angry men, like you're with like angular guitars on Six Music right now. And sometimes I'm listening to it going, they listen to Sleaford Mods. They listen to a bit of Fat White Family.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah. I think I talked to Lewis from Fat White Family a lot, and he's, you know, yeah, we both sort of think, yeah, the evidence is quite clear, but doesn't make you feel any better about it sometimes. And it also, going back to the Wiley thing, it's like, although it's guitar bands, and we're obviously not a guitar band, I mean, Lewis isn't a guitar band, but you do feel like they're messing with the recipe and not giving it the full ingredients, you know what I mean, a lot of the time.
That has been something that's kind of irked you over the years. Like I've said, like, I mean, I love situations like this, and I know I shouldn't, like, it's, but I don't watch Coronation Street or EastEnders or any reality TV.
Oh, sure.
So like I have to get my entertainment out of other places. So when bands start sort of cracking off at each other, like I just buy some popcorn, sit back on Twitter, don't get involved, and just hit refresh. And I've seen you like go at Slaves and Idols. Oh, yeah. I think they're like the two big ones in my head that I can remember the arguments from.
I learned my lesson about having a go at people online, because I had a little Twitter thing with Blossoms, and that didn't work out too well. And so I thought, yeah, I'm not doing that again. You can never really do it properly online. As regards Slaves, yeah, there was a little bit of commotion there, but they don't offend me anymore. But yeah, Idols do, yeah, definitely.
Do they still offend you?
Yeah, I don't think about them too much. But if I do, then yeah, it definitely offends me.
What is it? Like, what is it that winds you up about them?
I don't know. I think it's just the... I just don't believe him for a start. And there was a lot of detail in the first album that led me to believe that they were a street band. And it's quite clear that they weren't. I think on the, the campaign for the second album, and he's talking about knowing people that work for Saatchi, and, you know, we've done this. And the way he talked as well, I just thought, you sound like a fucking wanker, mate. And I felt a bit duped by it all. And then it became quite clear that my suspicions were correct. But it's a tough one. That kind of a mindset, you know, it goes over a lot of people's heads because a lot of people just aren't bothered. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because you make like music of a certain style and it comes from a real place, like maybe that it winds you up the other way. Like personally, what my favorite band in the entire world is The Clash, and Joe Strummer came from a massively privileged family, and it like doesn't make the music any worse to me. So like it's things like this don't really wind me up that much, but they do other people. I know that, like, that's
sure,
fair.
Sure. And yeah, I just think they are also a part of this whole new breed of tokenistic sort of, you know, righteous, you know, just full of little buzzwords, you know, lots of imagery and brief association with stuff that would say that they are, you know, right on band, you know what I mean? And I think that kind of thing's like, that's been going through the timeline of music forever. And I just think that a band like that and all the bands associated with them are the today's version of that for me.
Mm.
So, it winds you up, it gets you, you know, because I'm obsessed with what I do. And so if somebody's going to come out with something that is a carbon copy because they were influenced by what we do and other people, that's just not enough. You know, you've got to have a message. And I don't think they've got a message. They're just pulling at social themes and just dressing them up. It's like they're just sitting there with and just taking things out of an hat and going, right, we're going to talk about the NHS now. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And they haven't got a lot to say, you know what I mean?
What happens now if you see like an act or something that winds you up? Like, do you have to stay off Twitter? Do you have to like almost like grab your phone and fuck it into the fire going, right, not today, Jason, not today?
Yeah, you do. You have to calm down because I don't want to turn into a fucking Victor Meldrew. But, you know, unfortunately, I probably am to a lot of people. But, I try and get involved now with new music and try and see the good in it.
Yeah, I've seen your music. I've seen your Spotify playlist. I was having a look at it earlier on. There's some good stuff on there.
Yeah, you know, some of it. And there is some good stuff out there, you know. And I'm not a classist, so to speak. You know, I'm not going to not listen to something because it's not working class. That's just stupid. But, you know, if someone's going to come along and just steal things and wear it as a badge, it just annoys me, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
How do you guys fare in Sleaford Mods around the world? Like, I know like very early on Germany took to you quite well, but what other sort of places are you kind of big in, really?
We're looking at Eastern European territory, we're looking at Hungary and all those other places around there. I don't know, we're going further afield. We've just been to Australia and thinking, you know, obviously we're going to be in America now, but obviously that's fallen through. We're going to do Coachella. That would have been interesting. Just trying to think of other places to play.
You were going to play Coachella. I don't know. It took a second for the penny to drop there. Like Coachella, like just imagine, I can't imagine like you enjoying Coachella in the slightest. I find in my head, like the the idea of Coachella is probably one of the, I don't know, I just get this idea of like very vacuous people going to it.
Yeah, that's the image it's got, and I think it's trying to change that. But they've been asking us from year dot.
Oh, right, you know, okay, fair enough.
Every year we get asked, but we just ain't got it. We ain't got the, we didn't have the money, or we didn't have the time. We didn't think it was right or whatever. But it got to the point now where we were like, yeah, we'll do it, fuck it. And we were going to base a whole US tour around it, you know.
Oh, wow, right, okay, fucking hell. What about Glastonbury? Will you be back?
Hopefully, yeah. I mean, see what happens, isn't it?
Mm.
Glastonbury tend to concentrate on, you know, up-and-coming buzzy bands and, you know, classic bands. I'm not sure if we're either of those two. Invites are few and far between. Well, not few and far between, but, you know, they tend to invite you at once every other year, or if you've got a release, then yeah, you go. But if you've not got an album out, then you're not going to get a go, you know what I mean?
What else have you got like coming up in like the rest of the year, like music wise like obviously, like, we're not talking tours here, we're not talking leaving the house even, like, but what can we look forward to?
Well, we were gonna record a new album and then tour America, and then that was it. And then there was a load of European festival dates. And then we were thinking about doing a couple of UK shows at the end of the year, but that's all gone out the window at the minute. So
what's your biggest UK show to date?
We played Hammersmith Odeon.
Wow, that's pretty big.
That was really good. So that was brilliant, actually, with Stuart Lee and the Viagra Boys as well.
The first time I saw you live was at the Lexington in London. And Stuart Lee was at that show, and I'd never seen him. I was like, it was a double whammy for me because I was getting to see you guys for the first time, but I'd never seen Stuart Lee in person before. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah, he's really, really good. So we've known Stuart for quite a long time, so we kind of asked him to come along. And, you know, I'm quite a big fan of the Viagra Boys. I think they're great. So we asked them if they fancied it, and they popped along. And, it was really good.
Happy days. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me. And I'd imagine you'll be nothing but prolific with more music. You always are.
Fingers crossed, mate.
Yeah, you know, we'll see how it lands.
Studio, you know, but I'm hoping the lockdown they'll allow us to go out and record an album. I might personally write to Boris Johnson. Do you know what I mean?
Right, Jason. Thank you very much. Thanks for being part of the Slacker podcast, and cheers to the demo of Guillotine, and good luck with everything in the future. And I hope you get to wear your favorite belly top to Coachella next year.
Nice to talk to you, mate.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.